The film American Gangster topped the box office this weekend, pulling in $46.5 million. Denzel Washington takes the lead role as Frank Lucas, the 1970s drug lord who ruled Harlem's heroin trade. Now, it doesn't hurt that Americans love to watch gangsters. The Godfather, Goodfellas, The Sopranos, they're all movies and television that show gangsters as heroes, men who buck the system and whack the competition. Rappers seized onto the idea of the gangster, especially Scarface, Al Pacino's 1983 character Tony Scarface Montana. So what does our love for these dangerous criminals, real and fictitious, say about our culture? Here with me now to talk about the place of the gangster in popular culture is Mark Rowland. He's supervising producer of BET's American Gangster series. Mark, welcome.
Hi, thanks.
So, you know, American Gangster came out on top in this first weekend, partly because of the star power, but also this idea of the gangster. What is it that makes gangsters so attractive to Americans?
Well, I think they basically get to live out our deepest and darkest fantasies of untrammeled power, of money, of access to pretty much everything we want, and basically succeed in a material realm, which is clearly part of the American culture.
Tell me about your series. What did you focus on?
The series, the BET series, American Gangster, is a series of one-hour documentaries where we're really trying to tell not just individual criminal stories or, of individuals' criminal careers, but to try to place them in a larger social and historic context. So you can kind of understand that, you know, whatever this individual accomplished, it wasn't done in a vacuum, that there are certain, you know, forces around it, you know, that basically helped shape at least the context in which they could operate.
So you had the gangsters that were active during the Prohibition era, the people who were running liquor. How did the actual gangster evolve since then, and then also the fictitious gangster or the gangster of the movies?
Well, I think in real terms, in today's terms, I mean, it does seem that in many ways the drug trade in one form or another tends to drive a large part of criminal activity. I mean, you hear about numbers and prostitution, et cetera, but at least in researching our own series and so many of the individuals that we talk about, drugs and the prohibition of drugs looms large. It's drugs are popular. And when they're illegal, that creates a lot of cash opportunities on the street.
Do you see a similarity between the prohibition against alcohol and the prohibition against drugs, at least in terms of the opportunities, if you can put it that way, that it creates for illegal entrepreneurship?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, it's pretty much part of history that the whole Kennedy clan's, you know, rise to power was driven in part by prohibition and, in the illegal bootlegging trade, you know, that helped kind of swell their coffers. And I think that often in the past, a lot of illegal activity, you know, ultimately, you know, through generations ends up trickling and changing into more responsible activity. And I think that there is that possibility in the drug trade. But certainly the other point that I'd make in which there's a parallel is that neither of them work. I mean, prohibition, the country kind of wised up after about a dozen years and decided not only is this not working, it's creating a drug trade. It's creating a large cartel of criminal activity. It essentially did create the rise and the power of La Cosa Nostra. And I think that the illegal drug trade of the last, you know, or rather the drug laws that have become, you know, more sort of draconian, as the drug trade itself has grown, has done the same thing. It's kind of had the opposite effect. It's really created a climate in which there's more violence, there's more criminal activity, without really reducing the desire or the market for drugs, which, you know, by its nature tends to feed on people who don't really have control of their own addictive personalities.
So when you think about the drugs and alcohol that were and are illegal, you think about the people who market them. You think about those people, some of them fitting this definition of what's a gangster. Flip it around. Why do people look up to those people who control illicit substances?
Yeah. Well, I think part of it is certainly there's always been a fascination with outlaws and, with people that have basically kind of, you know, found a way to live outside the system and succeed in it and follow their own rules, so to speak. I think that, you know, it varying, you know, depending on who the gangster is and how they operated, I think that that has a lot to do with their own individual popularity. You know, sometimes it's a matter of style. Sometimes it's a matter of having a certain kind of code of honor. You know, it was interesting a little earlier in your program, you know, you talked about the whole movement of buy black. And I think that in the 60s, particularly the stories of Frank Lucas and Nicky Barnes in Harlem, you know, was really a watershed period where people in the communities were sort of wresting control of the drug trade within those communities from outside people, you know, from La Cosa Nostra. And there's a kind of perverse pride, you know, that exists that's sort of like, well, if you know, maybe it's not great that I'm buying drugs, but at least I'm buying it from someone who lives in my own community and is part of, you know, and is part of my community.
The flip side of that is that many people have said, you know, how can there be this big time film about Frank Lucas when he was poisoning his own community? You didn't see La Cosa Nostra poisoning their own community. You didn't see other people who were dealing, dumping as many drugs into their own community as you saw this black gangster doing to his own. What about that kind of argument, that there was a particular immorality about poisoning the well of Harlem as a black gangster?
Yeah. Well, I think that that's, you know, that's the facts, that, you know, essentially, if you're dealing drugs, you're the people that you're going to be, you have a market, and they might be coming in, they might be in your community, they might be coming from without it. And, you know, when you're heading a cartel, chances are you're both removed from it, and you essentially don't care that much, you know, about whether you do it or not.
Frank Lucas has been giving some interviews recently. Do you have any sense of how he feels about this newfound fame?
Well, sure. I mean, I interviewed Frank Lucas for our own show, and I've stayed in some touch with him since then. I think that Frank, you know, when he was at his heyday, he was sort of the opposite of Nicky Barnes. He made a point of laying low. So he really, really didn't have a public stage. And that's why I think this movie probably didn't get made until now, was because he really didn't tell his story until in a magazine article, you know, a few years ago, at which point, you know, people woke up and went, wow, that's a movie. And the wheel started spinning pretty quickly. Now, I think he's kind of enjoying his moment on the stage. However, I do think that he has regrets and remorse. He has a macho posture in which he doesn't really want to express it too much, because I think it's hard for anyone to basically negate their entire life and say what I did was a waste. But I think he definitely has conflicted feelings about what you just brought up, about the fact that a lot of people died from his trade and a lot of them were black people. And I think he feels bad about it.
Well, Mark, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Mark Rowland is supervising producer of BET's American Gangster.